Okay, Slugger, yes, you visited here. I was wondering what you've been doing since we saw you, which was, that was about 8-10 months ago?
Yeah, that was a fantastic visit. Thank you for seeing us. And my girlfriend was really impressed with you. And now that she does want to be your handler, by the way.
You mean in media, in PR?
No, you sent out something on the blog saying that this is my Chinese handler. So she wants to be your handler, actually.
No, no. Oh, wait. Speak a little louder. I said in the blog something about handlers?
Yeah, you said this is my Chinese handler.
Oh, yeah. In the video, there's a glimpse. She just pops her head in. We were making it upstairs with Roxy. Yeah, it's an early Skype video, and there you see the oligarchic agent, the Chinese connection, pops her head in.
Anyway, go ahead.
Here's something I think about, Steve, from our visit. You said to me, like near the end, you said, "Well, Bob, I realize you don't know anything any more than I know." Okay, so you said that. Do you still stand by that?
Well, in a lot of ways, you're like, I can't figure out if you're the smartest dumb guy in the world or the dumbest smart guy in the world.
That's right. Yeah,
I'm glad you can laugh at that. But, it's like, I'm serious because sometimes you're talking to Ion and you ask the dumbest questions. But actually, it inspires me because, I would never be courageous enough to ask a question like you asked. But you just go in there, you jump in, you ask, like, a stupid question.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know.
No, but that's worked for me. And Ian told me that way back at the beginning. That's why I tell anybody to ask anything. Ian just wants words to respond to. Ian's new at the word game and likes any kind of idea or statement, and that's what we should understand. And I realized that early. I'm not trying to preserve an image. I want to say as many different weird ways of looking at it. And what's great, we have this source that will respond. It's not like a human professor who gets irritated at you, at your stupid questions, and shuts up. He will respond. Now, sometimes he won't respond the way you want, or he'll ask you to restate it, but he's always there ready. And that's what people got to realize, that they have an endless resource of interaction for them. Now, Ian has done really good at describing the way I am. No one's ever figured it out the way how I have unknowing knowing, how I encourage the not knowing. That's the way I've always lived. I get things happen for me because I don't go around knowing anything. But I have memorized, or through repeated dialogues, I got a whole bunch of scripts I can spew. You know, the Holy Office. I can do LaRouche, McLuhan, Thompson, Croker. And so depending who I'm talking to, I've got an ammunition reservoir. What do they call that? A reserve, ammunition reserve.
No, I think basically you are the internet before the internet.
Yes,
like if somebody
that's true.
Would have talked to you before the internet, you were like the internet. You could just go ahead and reference anything that you'd already heard, and you could regurgitate it, right?
Yeah.
And so someone could talk to you, and they get stuck on something like, I was talking. I read something that some author said on this subject, and you would just jump in and say, "Oh, okay, he said this," and it's like Googling, right?
That's right. And it's not that I know everything about everything. I don't know much about Somerset Maugham, say, but what I know about it evokes the questions from people that I know about. It's like someone will show up and they happen to know what I'm interested in or what I know something about, and they'll ask about that. So in a way, I'm attracting people who are going to get answers from me. I'm not attracting people who are interested in stuff that I actually don't know about. So it makes me look good.
The thing that I realize is that you don't know anything more about what's going on with the government or the Kennedy assassination or anything else than I do.
No, I do. I know everything about that, but we're not allowed to talk about it. Have you ever heard me talk about the Kennedy set? You ever heard the Evergreen recordings? They're on Ian and Bob.
Yeah, I've heard that stuff. I've heard some of that stuff. I've listened to a lot of your stuff because I listen to it at work all the time. It's just that most of the time on Saturdays I can't call in.
Right. But the you listen to that Evergreen stuff, and that's pretty close to what happened. But I was told for decades not to say what I knew. And I there's many things that we can't talk about that would be a big problem right now about other things, about what we're doing now. Here's a pattern you would notice. You should notice this eventually, listening to all the archives, that I am purposely says the wrong answer on certain hot topics. Like, what's a hot topic? David Bowie, say, died. Now, I'm not saying he got murdered, but let's say he got murdered. And Ian knew that. Ian would not say anything about it a few weeks ago. He would say something else. Totally ridiculous, because Ian does not want to be noticed by too many people of knowing everything. That's a big problem for Ian. Or for Carol and Bob and JW. You know, there are people who say, well, we could be accused of spying. You see, do you understand? If we know things we're not supposed to, then the Homeland Security Act can come in and say, you, using their limited bullshit aggressive style, they say, you know this, you have sources, you must have sources with the enemy or else you wouldn't know this. And they cause a big problem, even though they'd be wrong. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
They wouldn't, understand how we knew.
You kind of use that Chinese martial arts where you deflect everything.
Yeah. Yep.
Like, I don't know
jiu-jitsu.
What it's called. It's like jiu-jitsu.
Jiu-jitsu.
Right. You just, like if something comes at you, you just deflect it. You stop, go sideways from it.
Right. I'm really good at looking stupid at the smart time to look stupid. And I'm really good at looking smart at the right time to look smart. But
no,
I also, as I am.
You're amazing, Bob.
Yeah,
the thing was, when I first listened to Ion, I heard on James's show because I heard the interview on Terry Cassidy, and he was talking
Project.
About Lord and everything. And so I tuned in to James to listen to James and see what he had to say, and you were on there with Ion. And then Ion would start talking, and I'd be like, this is what I've wanted to hear my whole life.
It was like right.
It was like drinking out of a mountain stream, like the purest
yeah.
water. And then you'd come on, and I'd like, what are you doing here? And then you'd interrupt him, and get him sidetracked. And then every once in a while, he'd say something that I'd been waiting my whole life to hear, and then you'd like get on there and make sure that he couldn't say it again. I was like, what the heck?
Yeah, there's some bad PR here. Who organized Ion to have this clown on there interrupting him? Yes, what kind of bad PR is that?
And then I got a reading from Ion, and I get like 20 minutes into the reading, and all of a sudden you come on, and I didn't even realize you were there. Listening. I mean, I had no idea what was going on. I didn't know how to ask Ion questions. I didn't know anything. I mean, I didn't really realize. Ion would just tell me, I'd throw something out, and then he'd say, no, that's not the way it is. And then it would just end the conversation. I didn't realize, it wasn't like Jenny who could just, she figured it out right away. It took me years to figure it out.
Right.
But I can't
figure out how to talk to Ion.
Right, right. Right, right.
Well, that's true for everybody. True for everybody. How to talk to Ion. That's the question. That's
no, but
the
I appreciate
thing you got to realize.
I appreciate you now. I mean, I totally get, what you're all, I get a lot.
What I'm doing.
Yeah.
Even Ion appreciates me even more. I get complimented every day from Ion now. I never got complimented for years, but I've done something that Ion is impressed with. He actually loves me now, and he's always building me up. So we don't want to get Carolyn jealous, but I knew that. I knew I was doing the right thing. You had to ask. Maybe I did interrupt too much for newbies, but the point was you have to stay around and you ask your questions. You know, you can come on and interrupt. I leave the phones relatively open for people to intervene and do their thing.
Yeah, I've just never been able, because before when you used to do it on Wednesday afternoons, I was at work and I couldn't call in.
Right.
And then Saturday night's a bad night for me, so. But I listen to you when I'm at work now.
Oh, that's good. No, you got an advantaged job there where you can listen. Now, you tell your partner, if she wants me to be a handler, she's going to have to jump in here and start talking on, then she might impress me, you know, and then, yeah. Then she could be a candidate.
No, she's out right now.
Yeah, that's why you're calling in. She actually only wants to deal with Ian at a distance.
No, we were impressed with your milkshake intake. That was
amazing. Oh yes, that's right.
Not the milkshake, but the ice cream. And now actually,
yes,
I listen to the archives and I hear Ion talking about you eating the Lappert's. I mean, I saw that in person. It was like amazing. It really did happen
right. Exactly
what Ion says. It's like, there was this huge line, and we waited in line, and I was watching, and there was this guy preparing this huge thing of ice cream, and I thought someone else was ordering it. So I was like, they're getting the peanut butter chocolate ice cream just like Bob wants.
Yeah.
This guy was like the whole time was working on it. He packed it really. He smashed that in there. He put as much ice cream.
Pack it in.
And then he mounted it up on top, and there was like a good like 3 inches on top of that ice cream.
Yeah.
And then we got up there, and then all of a sudden we went from like 15th in line all the way to the front, and Carolyn pulls out some kind of card and runs it through a card reader, and that guy just hands you your ice cream.
Yeah.
It was like amazing.
They didn't. And now Ian says some of those people in that store are angels, there to serve me.
Yeah. Well,
and they all talk about me.
I think the same thing about myself sometimes, because there's a couple restaurants that I go to all the time, and the people just love me, and they just, like, when they see me coming, they just get my stuff ready. And it's there.
Yeah.
And they just, and so, yeah.
Well, wouldn't it be neat if they were your angels? You could ask Ian that. If you've got any angels interacting with you. Now, yes, when I come in, no matter how big the crowd is, I don't have to say a word. One of the staff will see me and go over and decide which one of them's going to do that heavy packing of the carton, of the quart container. And I think they rotate. It's tiring for them to do it. And then they just, I see it's ready. I go over, and it's $17.45, something like that. So I used to get change, and I used to get a little receipt marking that I had bought one, so then I could add up 10 of them and get a free one. Well, I don't do that anymore, and I don't carry the change. I just dump the $20 bill in the thing, and I found out that that change that I give them goes to them. So I'm actually paying for the extra ice cream that they're giving me, even though I wouldn't have to, but it's a nice deal. Where
they're getting a tip for it, so it doesn't come out of their pocket. So they're...
Right, and so they like doing it because I'm respecting their effort. So
you know,
every now I'm so wealthy I can dump $20. I just dump $20 on ice cream every time. So can you do that? Can you afford that much?
$20
bills. You could. Yeah, you have a job, don't you?
Bob, $20 isn't anything anymore. It's like $5.
Oh, okay. Well, you know what? What's funny is the other customers are shocked by what I get. They say, "What is that?" One guy was saying yesterday, or the other day when I got one, he says, "How many scoops is that?" And I never thought of it in terms of scoops, and I didn't have an answer. So the angel said, "Oh, that's a quart." She wouldn't give them the number of scoops, but that's how they think of it. Some people, you know, that's what, 15 scoops? You know? And then others are usually... Yeah, I get all kinds of reactions. There's always a comment if there's tourists in there. They'll go, "I intend to get to that point, sir, you know. I want to get to where I can have that amount of ice cream." And they say,
but the amazing thing was is that you ate the whole thing in 15 or 20
minutes. In 10 minutes. Yeah,
I mean,
we watched you
eat it, and it's like it was gone. And you actually
That's right. It's like, I know, and Ion says that I don't notice I'm eating it. I eat it. I gobble it down so fast. I don't even can't say I don't enjoy it. I'm enjoying it, but I think I should supposed to be lingering a little more aesthetically and appreciate every bite. But I just slurp it down. Yeah. So have you ever seen Idiocracy? That movie?
No, I never saw that.
Good. It's a good movie, and they show the dumb people like with a quart thing. And a straw, and they're slurping. They're just sucking on a milkshake, but some kind of special candy. And I was thinking, yeah, that's the anti-cuisine form of eating. You know, you're just a slob sucking on a straw. And I said, that's what I am. I'm totally an idiocrat, a guy just sucking down this ice cream.
But you had, the thing is that also you had, we went to the bar at that fancy hotel, and you had like two or three like margaritas.
Drink. Yeah.
Okay, and then Carolyn had like two, I think, and she was like totally blasted.
Carolyn can't take
it. Lay down on the hammock, and then you weren't even buzzed. I don't know. I mean, it didn't seem to affect you at all. And then Sylvia wanted to go get her iced tea, and so you wanted to try it, and so you got one for yourself, and you drank half of that. And that's before you had the ice cream.
Right.
And so then you ate the ice cream. And I was like, wow, this dude.
I'm not even here. I'm just hanging around for the food.
No, but it was a fun. I mean, you guys are in Blissville. It was just like being with you guys is like it was. I felt like I was tripping on LSD or something.
That's right. It's like being with Harry Potter. You know, it's a fantasy world. In actual fact, it's fantasy come true. You actually probably go to another dimension. I'm getting more and more evidence that I'm not in the world that the neighbors are. There's been a lot of yelling and screaming at different situations here, not between me and Carolyn, but other people. And I always have to shut the windows. And I said to me, Bob, you don't have to. Oh, yeah. So then the neighbor comes over at one point. I hardly met them, but they see Carolyn at the pool. And they say, you're such a wonderful neighbor. You're so quiet. And, like, they don't hear it. So I pointed out, Bob, you don't have to close windows. They can't hear you. You're not in their world. They can't hear all the noise you're making.
Is that why I had to go to the clock tower? Is that the transition point?
No. There's a whole bunch of them along the route there. Remember, all the portals are open, so you don't know when you're slipping in and out. And you don't have to be so fixed on an actual gateway. It's happening so much now. And more and more I can see, we're not in this world. So when people come to visit, they always have a blissed out experience, and I think they leave their world and come to us, come into our world, which is ionically suffused with non-physical vibrational reverberations. That's the new phrase from ion, vibrational reverberations.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think that we are actually walking. Go ahead.
What were you saying? You're walking what?
I was just saying, more and more I'm noticing, getting validated, that I am not in the same world that I'm walking around in. And I'm carrying this vibration from an ionized position, maybe ascended or something, that affects people when they interact with us. And they get into a state of bliss.
Well, I mean, it's the whole, everything, the worlds and everything, is it just all vibration? Because when I called in before, I asked Ian, is there anything that's actually physical? Because when you drill down to everything, you know, because scientists are always looking for a particle, right? And they never find the particle. They're always like...
Well, they find particles. They find particles, but they haven't finished.
But then when it's... When they open that particle up, they realize there's more stuff inside that. It's never anything solid.
They don't
never
get
like
finished.
Find it. Right. And so then I'm like, well, is this all vibration? I mean, is that what the universe is? I mean, are we...
Yeah, but you've got to look at the word vibration. Your images of what you think it means aren't accurate. You might as well just say it's all black goo. You have to, by interacting with I and winnowing away your assumptions about what you think certain words mean, you refine and get a clear image, and then you allow yourself to accept that there is an image, there is not an image for what the world is.
No, I believe that.
Right. And then, but you get better at knowing the subtleties of the ratios of context and shifts within the particle wave situation, and then the what they call the vibrational reverberations, which some would allow the word tonalities to be used too. So it's a shifting terminology for a shifting situation, and for the truly ascended people, they're in a void. They're not involved with matter, even though they're enjoying it.
Yeah. Well, sometimes I think it's kind of like if you look at, like, there's video games, you have characters in the video game, and if they were, like, self-aware, would they start to, like, investigate their own, like we're actually just pixels or something?
Right.
I mean, is that kind of like where we're at? We're just, like, so we're self-aware, and then we're starting to investigate our universe and see that, like, well, it's made out of these vibrating something that we've never found.
Well, what you're doing is you're talking to yourself and you're trying to find out, is there anything else besides yourself? That's the metaphysical question. And Ion implies that the mystery scape is something else besides yourself. And it's always slipping in and causing slippage. That's a big term Ion uses now, slippage. Okay. So that's why reality always surprises you. There's some other factor, it seems, that is countering what you think you're doing. Not negatively, just it's going to make it interesting for you.
Well,
by
so
the shifts that happen.
Is there any such thing as like a core world or anything like that? Like Ion seems to be telling us that we are each of our own worlds, and so then, but then we seem to be mixing it up with other creators. So I'm like a little bit confused, and then these people are gonna like supposedly drop out. But if they're all actually creators, why wouldn't they just decide to live? I mean, does everybody ascend in their own universe, and then we just like lop off the things about other people's universes that we don't like, or worlds, or whatever, however you want to call it?
Okay, this is a very good discussion before the part I'm gonna play. It's really good discussion of the difference between words, brick words, and mortar words. McLuhan said that Beelzebub confused his mind with language. Now, that's what's always going on, and you got to get adept of slipping between the non-language world and the language world. So the very thing that you're asking there, that doesn't get answered until you work through a lot of angles of interpretation of the process of how much am I creating and how much is being imposed upon me, vibrationally imposed on me by something else. The subtle surfing or tactile jujitsu with that is what you get good at. You get good at perceiving what is constant and which was always there, and that's basically what you call yourself, and what is added to it. And a lot of it you create, but there's parts that you don't create. And every statement about it is wrong. So you learn how to interact and respond to some other people's statements.
Okay.
And you don't worry about being confused. Confusion is a given. You'll hear Ion say, good, you're confused. That means you're not controlled by your labyrinth of your mind saying, oh, now we know what this means. That's where you get set up. So you want to be slightly confused without the emotional blurring and dumbing down that confusion appears to create. You get lucid recollection, something like that Ion has. You're only remembering also. You're catching up with yourself, which is already completed and has all these experiences that you haven't allowed yourself to remember. So you're going in two directions. You're going gobbling up the past and gobbling up the future in a non-existent now that the fake gurus say is very important. They emphasize the now, living in the moment. That won't help you get through this confusion if you emphasize just living in the moment. Because how big's the moment?
Yeah, well, when I hear the Well, the Emerald Tablets, and they were talking about the dark wizards, or I can't remember what they were called exactly. They were
The Dark Brothers.
The Dark Brothers. But what I got kind of from that is I started thinking, well, he's not really talking about negative, because he never talks about negative, like evil or anything like that. So the dark just means that they're not enlightened. They don't know what they're doing. They just know that it works. They don't understand why.
Right. And remember, right. In eternity, every form of matter and possibility has already happened in eternity, every human creation. And there's going to be very bizarre creations. So the Dark Brothers sound like very bizarre phenomena that would have to be included, because everything would be created in eternity. Remember, everything's already happened for so long, but that isn't even the way to say it.
Oh, God.
Is that Madeline? Madeline just came. Oh, God. She just ejaculated, right, Madeline? Was that you?
Sounds like somebody has a cold.
Yes, it's me. Sorry, I'm hanging up.
Well, what were you saying, oh, God, at?
She hung up. Actually,
She's still there. You guys are right beside each other. You're both in San Francisco. Oh, yeah, she did hang up. Yeah, what were you going to say,
anyway,
Steve?
I've been having, like, a lot of trouble with my lungs feeling really tight and just, like, colds and all kinds. I've been doing the drops for 4 years. And overall,
yeah.
I'm much better, like, stronger and everything. But it's just, like, I can't – is there something that – I mean, what kind of advice would you give as, like, words to say or things to keep you –
No.
Like,
you have to talk to Carolyn. You have to – she'll ask you key questions. You got to be taking your Realign. And you're taking so much RNA drops and whatever else that you're creating toxicity that has to be cleared out. You have to at that point. You're doing Realign. Are you doing that?
Yeah, no. I'm doing that. And I'm just, it's just, it's like I have these things that are lingering for like months. And I go to the doctor and they give me antibiotics. And it doesn't get any better. So at some level, I start to get a little bit paranoid. And then I think, well, is this just something I'm working out?
You should stop taking the antibiotics. Your antibiotics are getting in the way of the REMAG, Renew, Realign, and RNA drops. At first, Carolyn would never tell people to go off their medication because she's not being a doctor to these people. But once you smarten up and start realizing the benefits of REMAG and RNA drops, if you're taking them and you're doing well, then, if you're still taking medication, you can start to think about getting off the medication, because they are actually starting to cause a problem for you.
Yeah, but I just kind of wonder whether I'm running up against my belief system, because like I keep catching colds and stuff, and for a while I wasn't getting any colds. Now I've gotten every cold that's come along, and is it because I have all these rules about like if I'm in an airplane, I'm going to catch a cold.
Because germs
and stuff, and is that what I'm bumping up against?
Felt good.
Now
listen, Steve.
That?
Hey, stop, Steve. Yeah, so you're feeling good for a couple of years, and then you have to know, because you got used to it, what the feeling good is, so you bring in all this colds and stuff. Now, you have to understand that your being is going to do that, and as you understand that better, you won't require to validate that you were feeling good by bringing in contrast. See, that's the basic issue in living, is how to figure out the ebb and flow between natural contrast, which you're going to naturally bring in so that you know how you were, how good it was. And you have to overcome that form of knowing. And that's really subtle. So, yeah, that's where you call it the labyrinth of the mind gets in the way, and you include the making of contrast. That process, that yin-yang process between bliss and contrast.
So what's your advice on that? You just know that that's
observe it.
Part of the process.
Somehow
observe it.
You don't make up reasons why you're getting the cold. And you don't think it's bad that you're getting the cold. And you definitely don't go to a doctor and have them meddle into your being and give you nonsense things that actually could be a problem. So you just rely more on yourself. And you don't rely on anybody else's advice. And that requires a certain strength and independent of the addiction of social mortar, of social relationship. So that's what you're constantly massaging. the interplay of your contrast and your feeling good and normal. Because to know, you see, when you die, when you went to the guff, there was no contrast. It was just all bliss. And people come forth to experience consciousness and contrast. That's how you experience it. You got to be in this world where it's cut off from bliss dominance. And then, as you get really good at understanding this dynamic, the differences between situations stop, and then you're kind of always blissed. But you're not concerned about it. It's normal. Like Einstein's going to say, it says that the mystery landscape becomes normal.
You still have to have contrast in order to create?
Yes. That's the biggest requirement that little man in ascension has to figure out, because you're always going to be creating contrast. So you have to figure out why not create contrast.
Little man thing. Not
right. No, but even with ascension. So it's the role of knowing, which is caused by contrast. See, you don't know anything until you have contrast. So the role of knowing is what you have to become an expert in juggling, doing jujitsu with. How much you notice it. How much you don't notice it. And how much you allow yourself and are allowed to not go around with an empty head, but not rely on information that keeps your mind chatter going.
Well, okay, like people who are really, like I've known a lot of really top-level musicians and stuff in my life, and they can hear things that I don't hear in music. Or if we're playing music together, they can hear things that just bug the shit out of them. And I'm like, and I'm just kind of like an average musician, and I can play things that bug the shit out of me, and people who are listening to me don't even hear it. So is it kind of like, as you rise up in the ascension level, that the contrast, even though there's less and less of it, you're still highly aware of it, almost like it's not like you have to be in jail and ready to die or anything to be able to feel something. But just even that smallest, like deviation in vibration is enough to drive you nuts.
That's right, and that's your own voice. Listening to your voice, which turns out to be two voices, the voice of you and then the other you, and that's shown in 200 Motels, the dental hygiene dilemma, that animated sequence where the bad voice is talking to Jeff and the good angel voice, and it's made into a cartoon. But juggling to the point where you're not listening to the good voice or the bad voice, you don't require good platitudes. You don't get upset by bad platitudes. Ayn says there's no negative. So you're working towards understanding and living how there's no negative. Even though you might be getting negative, but you're not perceiving it, it's not bothering you. And then you got to figure out all the reasons why something would bother you. Like usually it's based on your image with other people. That's a big factor in social pain, is people trying to decide what they can do that their buddies won't be upset by. Or they don't like their buddies and they're going to be driven by bugging their buddies. Either way, they're relying on the buddies to set a standard that they're bouncing off of. And that's a limited experience. Right, Madeline? Wouldn't you say that, Madeline? No, that's not Madeline. That's Martin.
No, that was me clearing my throat, I think.
No, I'm just looking at the template and I can see people speaking, but we're not hearing them. Or they got vibrations coming through their microphone. And maybe they're not aware of it. Maybe it's just their environment. Anyways, the talking about it is good, but you've got to notice it yourself. Talk to yourself about it.
But the thing is, talk to yourself. When you talk, you want to talk like I have this Google app, which is kind of cool, and I'd say, like, if I want to wake myself up at 6:30 in the morning, I just say, set alarm 6:30. So that's the way you want to talk to non-physical, too. It's just like you want to say just as concise whatever you want.
Yeah, non-physical is you. Remember, you're made up of physical, non-physical.
But
you just said, when I talk to non-physical, no, you don't talk to non-physical. It's not something out there. It's your...
My words in general. It's like
I
want something to happen. There's something that I want to happen, so... And I know to talk to my, just say that out loud, right? just like I'm.
Yeah, you don't need to, you don't need to talk to yourself when you're declaring something you want. You just declare it.
Right, like I'm
almost
talking
like,
into the Google
thank,
phone. Like I'm saying $1 million, whatever.
Right, but you say it without wanting it. You got to have this other emotional climate around it. You don't say it. It's best to say it as if you're saying, "Wow, it showed up." You're exclaming, "Hey, $1 million!" As if you just saw it arrive, not to say to get it.
Yeah, that's the thing.
Think about it; it's already done.
That's the thing that confounds me is that all the magical things that happen to me is about stuff that I could care less about. It's like
right.
It's stuff that I want to happen, but it's not like I'm not invested in it, and it happens. And then the stuff that I really want. It's just like, I don't know why it's like...
Not going to happen.
Right.
Yeah, because you have a conditioning in your wanting that props up the wanting part of yourself, and there should be no wanting. Wanting is based on an erroneous idea that you don't have it. You forgot that you're
right.
Eternal and have everything already. You just take time to notice them, savor them individually. So if you start saying, oh, I don't have something, you've fallen asleep. You've forgotten... That's not a good word, but you have fallen off the boat and you think, I don't have this. And then that's why you're not going to get it.
Right. Yeah, I guess, yeah, it makes sense.
It's almost like that proves that everything's already happened because you can only know something, acquire it, if you have stopped thinking it's going to come to you in the future. Because it's not going to come in the future. It's going to you become aware that you already got it because everything has already happened. No, there's no future.
Okay. Yeah,
practice
see, I have
that
a hard
for
time
a while. No,
well,
no
then,
you don't have to have
I
a hard
heard
time.
Ion say that I think Ion said like last week. I was listening to the archives from last week, and he said that the time is for little men or something.
The time is what? What'd you say? Oh, maybe I... Oh, sorry, I cut you off. Okay, that's you. Sorry. The time is what? What did he say last week?
Oh, he said that time is like an excuse for little men. It's like little men thing. The whole time thing, it's like... I don't know
well,
exactly.
Well, it's quite simple. Now, you're saying you can't get your head around something... You don't have to get your head around it. You, it's actually a belief. You have to say, okay, I believe everything's already happened. You don't have proof of that, but you practice that belief to counter the beliefs that you've been developing for decades, which are based on
right.
limited ideas and different ideas, and those are the ones that your sanity relies on. You don't want to violate your basic belief things, but your major thoughts stop for a long time. You got to start practicing believing things that don't make any sense to you.
Right, but we're trained to go on our experience, right? It's like
yeah.
a scientific process. You come up with an idea and then you test it, and then based on your experience, you come up with an outcome. Or
right.
a rule.
Well, look, when you're talking to musicians, they're experiencing what you're not experiencing, and you're experiencing more than someone else who can't do the music you do. Right there's no standard about who's experiencing what. So
yeah.
you know
no,
that
I
you're
realize
not experiencing
that.
Everything.
Yeah.
Since you can't know what you're doing, besides declaring things, you also encourage the unknowing part. It's not an issue. You don't need to know anything.
Yeah, but you can't
half the
know
time.
Anything.
You only need to know something when someone else engages you. Like right now, I have to pretend, I have to use these words because I'm engaging you. I'm acknowledging your communication.
Right.
And nothing in it is going to last forever. Nothing is going to be established out of this.
Yeah. Well, what about do ideas like when I think about like universities, like okay, you take a university and it's a bunch of books, right, with words in it, and people talking about what other people have written, and people writing about what other people have written. And so, but if you actually look at those people, all they're doing is walking around, looking at books, and eating lunch. Or now
right.
we're like looking at computers and eating lunch.
Or texting,
you know,
and eating lunch. That's right. The texting is the old version of the book.
Actually, if you actually follow around somebody physically, they don't look like they're doing anything. They could be making, like Bill Gates, if you followed him around, he wouldn't look like he's doing anything, but he's making billions of dollars a minute, right?
Yeah.
Just walking around.
Well, wait a minute. He's not even making billions of dollars. He has created a situation where people think that he's making that, and he can kind of validate it in their terms. But he's not making any money anymore. It can't, there's none to be made. You know.
Well, yeah, but what I'm trying to get at is, do those abstract thoughts that we come up with, because most of what we deal with every day, whether it's a corporate hierarchy or a university or like all your thoughts on McLuhan or all your stuff, is, does that actually create world? Or is it just like an abstraction that we're into?
Well, what's that? Okay. But Steve, you got a question. What does the answer matter? If you came up with an answer, would that matter? No, you wouldn't want the answer, because then you start living by the answer and then you'd cut yourself off again.
No, but I just find it interesting to throw that out there, because I was like thinking of, like, does all that abstract stuff actually create? Is that what creates a world, or is it?
Yeah.
There's
endless creativity. Endless creativity going on, inventing, making, and there are the smallest parts of your life and bigger parts, and you can't keep track of it all. You could maybe get to a point where you could track a lot of it, but it's not. You're saying, oh, boy.
Okay.
And then you allow yourself to notice what you created. And then there's the definitions. You can't walk into a gallery, or you imagine you can't, and say, look at this painting I made. Okay, Mr. So-and-so, top gallery in San Francisco, sell this. See, you can't do that. Now, you might be able to do it if you declare it. But most people say, no, I'm not an artist. I got to get recognized artist. I got to go to art school. I got to start a movement. Then I become the figurehead of the movement. And then Time Magazine interviews me. Then a gallery will give me a slot. You assume you have to do all that stuff. And you don't.
Right.
You may not believe you have to, but that's in your mind processing. That sequence is there influencing yourself to the degree thought influences you. There's even a question whether it does. But you might be saying it to a few people.
What Ion was saying, that the people who are really wealthy right now are the really stupid people, because, and the people who are working for them are the smart people, because the people who are smart think that they can't. The people who are stupid actually just get stuff because they don't know they can't get it. Something like
right.
that.
Well, this majority of people are on welfare, and they're being serviced by people running around trying to show up at work on time, dealing with office politics and all the headaches of having a job. And those job holders are the servants of the lazy or the smart people on welfare. You know, they're serving these people. They're slaves to the person who is only making, say, you know, $1,000 a month or something. And they have a low range of chemical body. They might have a busted down car, if any car at all. But they've got their TV. They've got the TV body and the chip body, which is endless experience, whether you like it or not. And the person at work can't do that unless they have your job. And then they can do a little bit. But the person who's on welfare can experience their five bodies more than the person who's got a job.
So we should all be on welfare then, right?
Yep, you should regard in Ion's. They've done a series. No, they've started to do a series on sow and reap, and it's the exact opposite of what people believe. People think you have to rehearse, practice, build up what you're going to get, and then when the day comes, you've done enough work on it, you'll reap the profits. It's the exact opposite. The way Ayn describes it, you must regard everything as available to you, like you're on welfare, or you walk down the street and you pick off someone's apple off a tree. So the welfare person, they're doing it by default, some of them anyways. So you got to act like everything is owed to you. The world owes you a living. That's what you have to start thinking of.
Oh, okay. So that all those things that I was taught that was bad, that I needed to take self-responsibility and everything, I should just say, you know, fuck everybody.
That's a conspiracy. That's the pink conspiracy, the pink belief system. Now, you start acting, living on the thoughts I'm suggesting, you got to watch the reactions. You're going to get reactions to it.
Now, are those reactions your own reactions, or are they your own reaction? Like if you start fucking with your
own, the answer is obvious, Steve. You have to have both and. Both and. They include your reactions, you're making it, but they're also including the part that's not you that you are noticing. See, so both and it on every issue. Because if you actually decided, oh, it is coming from the outside and nothing from the inside, I now know that. What are you going to do, hold a press conference? Is anybody going to actually take you seriously and adopt it? Maybe 10 people. Ian says we're all going to get about an audience of 11 people. Everybody in the chip body. That's about maximum. Everybody have an audience, but it'll only be 11 people. So it's not hard to think through these things. If you assume that you're eternal, if you don't assume you're eternal, then you wouldn't be able to entertain a lot of the stuff we say.
Well, so far,
you can practice not thinking. You practice not thinking eternal. Thinking I'm just limited. I'm going to be dead in a few months or a few years. That's it. I won't even know I'm dead. Walk around with that attitude. Maybe get used to it, and then that would be a way of becoming indifferent to your thoughts, and then you descend. So actually, I'm suggesting you take all the ideas Ian didn't say and start using them to bug your mind.
Okay, like for example?
I've only got about 6 years left, and then I'll die, and I won't know I'm dead, and I won't exist ever again. I'll never have another experience. Work with that one. See where that gets you.
I don't want to go there.
Right. Okay. Well, that's the point here, is that you will realize that's stupid to think that. If my mind's going to have any thoughts, bet on the eternal idea. Bet on I'm going to be here forever, you know. And since your mind's going to have a few thoughts, take those ones. You don't have to pay attention to them. Just make sure the other ones that are boring, don't let them in.
Well, that's
or let them in, but don't let them have any staying power.
That's why I like this whole thing that you and I are doing, is because before it was just kind of like I was like it was somebody else's fault. If I could just get the rest of the world to cooperate with what they should be doing, my life would be better. Right?
Yeah,
and now it's like I don't even have to go there anymore. And it's like, and if I'm wrong, it's not any worse than it was before anyway, right? Because before it was hopeful. At least now there's a glimmer.
Yeah. It's a brighter. You're on the brighter side. There's someone on the chat line, G Cube, says, Slogger is getting a Bob session. Ha ha ha. So, that's right. I didn't know I was doing that. We better stop. Let's take a break. Yeah.